Hello and welcome to Hey, I Loved That Movie, the podcast where we rewatch the films we loved when we were younger to see if they still hold up. I'm Dan.
I'm Helena.
And unfortunately, Michael is off ill this week, which is why we had an awkward pause there. But instead, we are joined by a very special guest. It's Sammy Peterson.
Hello, I'm Sammy P, and today we are doing The King of Comedy. Is that... pause the music, great. I was wondering if I had to continue for a while.
No.
No, it's all good.
Give it 20 minutes, quick, go. Oh my God.
Yeah, I realised. So when we do the introduction, normally Mikey goes second. So that's why I was like a deer in the headlight moment. I was like, that's not my cue.
You're like, hang on. Now what?
What is this?
Is this the first episode that Mikey's missed?
Yeah, it is actually, yeah.
Oh, poor Mikey. Sorry I missed you, Mikey.
No, I'm the resident flake. There's been quite a few episodes where I've not been here.
But... Resident flake is good. I like a resident flake.
Yeah, that's Helena's nickname here.
The resident flake. I have two guests on my podcast every week and, you know, it can be a nightmare to schedule. So,
that's intense.
You know, I'm always about eight weeks ahead because sometimes, you know, on the day, you know, someone pulls out. And so I always record two when I'm recording just in case there is a resident flake there.
Yeah, we're normally like that as well with our like regular episodes.
We were until Christmas and New Year's when everyone was ill all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, we actually have run out now.
Yeah.
We're done.
Like we're gonna have to record. Like rain or shine. King of Comedy. That's
Yeah,
quite
what's
an
your
old
history
one.
with this one?
I just love it, and I know a lot of people would say that on the podcast, like, I just love it, but it is one of those films that I was shocked that it wasn't successful the time it came out, because I'm a film guy, I've made documentaries, I've always really loved film and TV, it's always been a real passion of mine, I could be described as a cinephile, and I just love it, like it... For me, I've never really, like, I do like Martin Scorsese films, but a lot of the time I can get a little bit lost in some aspects of it, and sometimes there's like too much violence and the story kind of gets away from me for a little bit. But there was just something about a guy that was obsessed with late night talk shows for me that was just so interesting, that you could see a guy who was clearly going through something and maybe a little bit mad. And then as it went on, I found it really interesting to follow a character that was a very unreliable witness, which I don't think happens a lot. Like, you can't really believe anything they're saying. Like, you can't believe where they're going, what they're doing, and you kind of have to piece together what's real and what's not. Even the ending, like, you kind of go, oh my god, like, was any of this real? What is this? Is this still his fantasy? I just find it, I don't know, as someone who grew up loving comedy, I was kind of like, oh, it is so, like, not that I'm admitting that I did this myself, but it is so interesting.
you never held a talk show host hostage to get on the primetime slot.
There's still time.
You're not supposed to give a hint as to what really happened to Mikey, okay?
I've heard he's fine. Everyone says he's fine.
He's
so
okay.
You should get out of that one. He's okay. He's doing okay. He just told me. I've never met him, but he's doing okay. But yeah, there is something.
He's definitely
really...
not head to toe in white duct tape.
He's definitely not. He's definitely not. But yeah, there's something really interesting to me about a guy that lives with his mum, clearly has some stuff going on, and he has a wall painted with people, and he pretends that he's making his appearance as a comedian on a late night talk show. There's just something that jumped out at me because I'd never seen a film like that before. And it kind of shocks me that it's a Martin Scorsese film. Like, it doesn't really make sense. Like, Taxi Driver's similar, but it doesn't really feel like a Martin Scorsese film, in that I don't think he would really make this film today.
No. It's frighteningly awkward.
Yeah, it's scary.
I thought it was going to be a fun sort of comedy romp.
King of Comedy, like,
maybe,
yeah, you would think
maybe
so.
Maybe buddy cop-esque thing going on with the two characters on the front, like the straight man and the Joker.
Everyone's awkwardly back-to-back. Yeah.
I was really, I was thinking, okay, yeah, King of Comedy. I'll set, you know, put my stake on it being a comedy. And yeah. Like, it's funny. Like, bits of it really tickled me, but oh my goodness, I was so uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's really got that vibe of just like, oh, this man is not okay.
Like, no one in this film is okay. No.
But it's a really good look into like parasocial relationships and stuff like that. Mm. And like, you know, in terms of like, you know, being people, big fans of podcasts, and we've started this podcast and we've managed to get, you know, people on that we're fans of, but it's like,
yeah, we never had to hold up anyone to get guests on the podcast.
No, but like,
and you should have,
right? We've heard you several times on things, but yeah, you know, yeah, this is your first time going, oh, there's these people that exist, you know.
I found it so interesting that you can watch a film like this and it is uncomfortable viewing. Like, you know, when you have that thing that you go, oh my God, I love this so much, and you show it to someone that you've like just started dating, or you show it to someone that you're like, oh my God, you'll love it. And then during the film you go, this is horrendous. Like, it is so dark and it is, there's not a lot of light in it. And even though you could describe it as kind of a comedy, it's so dark, and Sandra Bernhard in it is so incredible. Like, her performance is so incredible.
She's phenomenal in this.
She's phenomenal. Yeah.
The highlight, definitely the highlight of the film for me, with her, like,
absolutely.
I mean, it's not even like descent into madness. It's like she starts pretty fucking clever.
Yeah.
It's just the way these two sort of, I think, quite narcissistic people.
Yeah.
Just feed off each other and come up with this insane plan.
Yeah.
And their confidence in what they want is just insane.
Yes. Yeah.
But the fact that there's the two of them together is like greater than the sum of their parts. And it just, because this movie goes from like, okay, that's a bit weird, to, oh my God, is this actually happening?
Yep.
So it's such a twist. Like, when they go from like, she wants him to deliver a letter to Jerry, this like talk show host, confessing her love. And then it's like, okay, actually no, instead of delivering a letter, we're going to hold him at gunpoint.
Yeah.
It really takes a turn. Like,
it does.
And I guess the obsessiveness of them as well, of just, to them, everything they're saying is real. Like you were saying about which bits are real and which bits are sort of in their fantasy. There was a bit, it's probably about 45 minutes in, where he takes Rita, which is the woman that works at the bar. He takes
the only
her to,
sane person.
Yeah. He takes her to Jerry's house, and they're on the train together going there. And I immediately was like, well, this is his fantasy, because before this scene, in his fantasy, he was getting married to her. There's no way in her right mind that she would go with him anywhere.
Yeah.
And then as soon as Jerry is introduced in that scene and he is just so unhappy and uncomfortable, and I was like, oh shit, no, this bit's real. This is actually happening. Like,
Yeah. And there's a bit as well, because, you know, Jerry Lewis was kind of a well-known, awful person, I think, to work with. And that there was a part, there's a part where the door doesn't open for him. And it wasn't actually in the script that didn't work. It was just him getting frustrated with the door.
Yeah.
Like,
he did seem really cross with
really
the housekeeper.
Cross. And it's apparently just him. He just got really upset as a person. And he was just known as a bit of a prickly character throughout his career. And I'm talking like about him as if I'm not sure. I don't know his status on if he's alive or not. I don't know.
He's very dead, I believe.
Good. Okay.
You know,
I didn't mean good. I'm so sorry. But I didn't mean good. Like, I'm relieved. But there was something about him that he was just an awful person, and to work with, he was really difficult. And I kind of like that Martin Scorsese kind of pushed it a little bit, because he is kind of the perfect person to play this role, because he's not necessarily likable person. So he does that really well, where you can actually imagine of that time, like a Johnny Carson or someone would have been a little bit prickly, because there are these wild fans out there that just want to talk to him and just want to have a spot on his show or have a date with him and want to have his kids and, you know, these
yeah.
people that were just waiting. Like, you can imagine that these people would have actually existed, which is yeah. frightening.
I think that's why, because originally the Jerry Langford character was going to have a different name, but when it was Jerry Lewis cast, they were like, if we keep the same name, then the scenes where they're in the streets and stuff and people are, like, talking to him and saying, oh, hey, Jerry, like, that's their actual reactions. Apart from the scene with the woman on the payphone, which apparently did happen to him at one point in real life, where he's like, oh, no, I'm busy, I can't talk. And she goes, I hope you get cancer. It's like,
yeah.
Bit of a full-on reaction.
Apparently that did happen to him at one point, and that's why they had that scene in there.
Yeah, I can imagine it, though. But we see it, you know, it's the whole concept of, like, fans and fandom isn't new to, like, the online world at all. I think it's, at least now people can do it for the most part from the comfort of their own homes.
I suppose back in the 80s there were also, I guess, less people to be fans of. Like, I can't see the Tumblr generation going nuts over Jerry Lewis, you know.
No, none of us are big. I mean, I was happy when I heard that he died before. I mean, I'm not a big, you can tell I'm not a big Jerry Lewis fan.
There was, you know, the Sherlock fans, the Doctor Who fans, and the Jerry Langford show Jerry fans Lewis. On Tumblr.
It is interesting, because I remember a lot of people at one point when the Joker came out were like, oh, they were such big fans of the Joker, and I saw it and went, oh, it's basically the King of Comedy, like, you know. And
oh yeah, Joker is the version of this movie I had seen, unfortunately. I haven't actually seen this before watching it for the show.
And it is interesting, though, when you watch the Joker and you go, oh, it's King of Comedy, and then you realize that Todd Phillips said that basically he was inspired by Taxi Driver and King of Comedy, and you go, oh, it makes total sense, because the ending of the Joker is the same premise as King of Comedy, and Robert De Niro is actually in it. He plays the talk show host, and so you're like, oh yeah, right. It's just a very different way to, you know, I guess when you have the knowledge of this film, that kind of makes a bit more sense. But I still didn't like the Joker.
I think
the Joker.
I didn't actually. I never got around to seeing it.
Inspired by is a strong word. I think remade is the word you're looking for.
Right. It sounds like I've watched the better of the two, by the sounds of things.
Absolutely.
Yeah, unfortunately, I heard too much about the Joker before I sat down to watch it. So then I was like, oh, I guess I'll just let this one pass me by.
I have a friend who has a film podcast, and I remember not liking the Joker and felt so weird about not liking the Joker, because everyone seemed to like the Joker, and then he said he didn't like the Joker, and I had, like, this relief that kind of washed over me, and I was so happy that he didn't like it, because I was like, oh, I thought we all had to like it, and I was like, no, you don't have to like any film. And I was like, oh.
I had that recently with Saltburn as well. That's the most overrated piece of shit I've seen for a while.
I really enjoyed Saltburn, so...
I like bits of Saltburn, because I hadn't heard anything about it before I watched it. And then as it was going, I was like, oh my God, the horrors. Like, you know, it changed very quickly. And I kind of think the descent into madness is kind of a interesting thing. And it's like, you know, like you think about like King Lear and things and you go, oh yeah, you can kind of see a journey there, where this film is so wild right from the start, and you have no idea why he is the way he is. And I wonder now, if it got made, if there would be like, oh, maybe we should explain a bit of his backstory. Because I think they would, they would do that now. I think they'd go, oh, you know, he lives with his mum. What's his mum like?
They'd show him putting on the crown makeup and everything. No.
The mum is just some woman screaming from the other side of the studio. Yeah.
And telling him to keep it down. Ma. Yeah. And if they did an origin story, which they seem to make of everything, they've done it with bloody Wonka. Like, you know, they'll if they end up doing something like this, it'll be interesting to see. I would be really interested to go, oh, how did he become like this? Because that's an origin story I would actually like to see.
Yeah.
Like, with the first time he's watched
comedy.
Jerry on TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Prince of Comedy. You've already written it. It's perfect.
Yeah, I feel like the closest thing we get to a backstory in this is his actual comedy set at the end.
Oh,
because
it
feels like he is being genuine at that point. And like,
does it?
The, Well, the thing that I found with this film is that it wouldn't work. Like, obviously, you don't know if, you know, did it actually go like that, you know, what happened and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the comedy set he does actually lands. And I don't think the film would work if he got up there and he was actually really shit at it.
Well, I think the whole point isn't that he's not dreadful. He's just not fantastic.
And he's just not a good person either.
I don't think that any of his... I didn't get the vibe that any of what he was saying on there was genuine. Like, he's found these things that he thinks are funny. Like, geographically, like, you know, I can say, oh, you know, I, like, grew up somewhere and, like, it was shitty and poor and, like, all of that. And just leave out the, like, and I was, in, you know, fundamentally very privileged and had quite a decent upbringing and still make jokes about where I was from. It wouldn't be at all genuine, but it might still be funny to, like, the niche audience that is, like, Southeast Kent. But I thought, no, I didn't believe a word he said. I mean, we can tell he's poor, but he's poor because he's 34 and has never really had a decent job. His job is, like, seems fine, but he's obviously can't afford to live by himself. So he can't be that good. Like,
he can afford the cardboard cutout of Liza Minnelli.
Oh, well, I was thinking he's probably got them from...
He's probably made them.
No, I reckon he's probably... Because he's a fan, and he's not just a fan of Jerry... I keep wanting to call him Jerry Springer, which is just...
It'd be a very different show if it was Jerry Springer.
I reckon, you know when there's premieres and stuff, and when you go to, like, he's, like, outside of the building that they work, that the Jerry show is filmed at all the time. Those were probably just being binned, like, thrown away.
Yeah,
like, he's taking these cutouts from, like, studios and from literally, I wouldn't be surprised if him and he had to fight a few other fans to get those ones out of the rubbish. Because he's not... Even though obviously this focuses so much on Jerry, we do have that glimpse into, like, he's got this autograph book that he's really, really proud of. And he also, like, there's that back and forth with, what's her name, Masha? Was that the artist's name? Masha, yeah.
Rita's the one that he goes on the date with, and Masha is the other obsessive one.
Yeah, so, and it's like she starts saying, oh, what have you done for me, what have I done for you? And they have this back and forth talking about, like, all the different situations they've been for all these different celebrities. Like, where he's given up the spot and, like, she's, like, brought him coffee. So when they're doing these, like, 8-hour stints standing outside the back door to backstage to see if they can get a glimpse or a signature. So it's not, I think it's just that it might be location-wise, and look, Jerry's, because he's filming so much being on a talk show, he's actually easier to, like, track down in New York.
Rather
than it being, like, because they're, like, you know, if it's an actor for a film, they might only be there for a few weeks and then they're off doing something else, filming somewhere else. Or off in Hollywood or something, whereas he's around a lot. And maybe that's one of the reasons that they latch onto him so much, is that they get that high from, like, seeing him more often because they know where he's going to be all the time. And it's, we have to talk about the first scene. He's leaving the, so Jerry, not Springer, is leaving the, he's leaving the show out the back door. And there's just this huge mob of people screaming at him. Trying to touch him, trying to get him to sign stuff, telling him to have his babies. And Masha gets in his car.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's just, like waiting in his limo for him,
Like, she just launches.
And she's locked in there, just, like, slamming her fists against the window.
So he manages to get out, and he's obviously, rightfully, pissed off.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter what kind of personality he has outside of this. It's like, you are more than entitled to be really fucking mad. So then she probably screams at him, and, like, she's locked in the car, and she's not screaming because she's locked in the trunk, she's locked in the bag. It's she's screaming because she hasn't been able to get what she wanted, which was to somehow, I guess, seduce Jerry, like, involuntarily. And
He's gonna get in the back of his limo and immediately think, she's the one for me, and they go off, and, you know,
she's amazing.
That's all love stories start.
It's very romantic.
And it's like, well, that was really bad, I hope they don't let that happen again, because that'd be really rough for him. And then so she gets dragged out, like, very much dragged out as well. Which was, I thought, was good. They didn't, like, pussyfoot around the, like, being quite violent with someone who's doing something equally violent. But, and then Pumpkin gets in.
Pumpkin.
Yeah, he's kind of acting Robert like he's trying to help and keep everyone back and stuff, and he's like acting, I guess, sane in that moment. But
yeah, because I guess he wants to be the hero, and he thinks he's a friend of Jerry's. Like he's always been a friend of Jerry's, so he's like trying to be the cool one, even though it puts her in a really bad light.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess so, it's just one upping on the wild person. Yeah, yeah.
And but also just the audacity of getting into someone's car and like being like, right, okay, well, I've got you captive. I want to talk to you. Like, I want to be on your show. It's a really good idea. Like, have you got any pointers? And it's like, what we find out is that this guy hasn't even done a set anywhere. He's not a professional comedian. No. Like, he's not even at like the start of his career. He's like, he's all or nothing. He's like, his big idea is that he's going to debut should be on the Jerry show.
Which makes sense. I think, you know, I would like to do my debut on Jimmy Fallon. Yeah, that's right. It is so bizarre that they, I guess she seems a lot further along in her madness in a way when you first see it because of the way that the first scene is. And then also that she stands outside of the building and she's already been blacklisted from the building. Like, it just she can't go anywhere near him. And you go, oh, it's so funny because then she kind of sees Rupert as like the guy. Like she can get what she wants out of him because, and I kind of like it. There's something very interesting about it, and it's a great choice, I think, for them to go, oh, it'd be amazing if she kind of believed that he was actually friends with him for a little while. Like, it kind of doubles down on her own madness that you go, that she kind of goes, oh, wow, yeah, you know, you are.
Yeah.
You are like that. Like,
and that reinforces his belief in himself as well.
Yeah, yeah. And that he will talk, like, the most embarrassing scene ever is when, like, it's hardly watchable, I think, that scene when he actually goes to the house. Like, it's a brutal watch. Like, it's so hard to watch that scene, and all you can do is feel for that one kind of regular character, Rita, who kind of goes along with it and really believes, you know, because I think we've all known people that can kind of spin a lot of bullshit and tell you things. Like, I had a friend that once told me that they knew a really famous person, and I just always believed it. I always believed, he kind of had a photo with him, and they always believed it. And then one day we went to this thing, and the celebrity had no idea who he was. Like, and it was very clear, but they had worked together like a long time ago. And I think my friend kind of just thought, oh, yeah, like they'll remember me. But he was like, and he laughs about it now, but he kind of just thought he would remember him and they were really good friends. And so it was just this moment where we were kind of sitting there and we just weren't allowed. I was with this guy and he just wasn't allowed into that next bit to sit with him. And it was such a moment, and it always reminded me kind of like the King of Comedy going, I'm glad we didn't go down to his beach house. Like, I'm glad this was the moment, because imagine you kind of see with this film how far that can go.
Humiliating, but not criminal.
Yeah, not criminal. Breaking into someone's house, yeah. That is that next level. And I just find it really interesting that, you know, you can kind of imagine this playing out. Like, with people who kind of believe that they know someone, or you can actually imagine it happening. So those scenes aren't wildly out of the ordinary. Like, this isn't it's not like this is a really unbelievable film. It's kind of scary in the way that you go, oh, like this could absolutely happen.
Yeah,
at any point. It's so much about like stalkers breaking into people's houses and all that kind of thing. It's so much easier to track people down and find out where they live and all that kind of thing now. And it does still happen.
It does.
Not quite, you know, exactly as the film, but
it's one of those things, though. I think, I mean, obviously podcasts slightly niche. I think maybe not quite the same. I hope. I mean, I'm yet to be stalked, so, you know, touch wood.
Fingers crossed.
any day now. But they do, when you listen to, like, there's podcasts that I've been listening to for, like, what, 7 or 8 years? And, like, in my mind, I'm like, I feel like I know these people. But, I, you know, thank you. The rational part of my brain is like, no, you're a fan. You're one of many to them. Sure, every now and then you might communicate with one of them on, like, you know, Facebook or Tumblr or Twitter or whatever. But ultimately, you are one of many to them. And that's what it is.
Well, I did it the other day. Look, I was at a bar and I saw someone there that I listen to, I reckon, twice a week. And mm-hmm. I've always got them in my ears. I know them, but I don't know them.
Yeah.
And I just made a comment to them about something that they spoke about on the podcast. Like, I had that conversation with them. And there was just kind of a weird look. And I went, oh, sorry, man. I listened to you. I know we didn't have that conversation. And it was, you know, it was because we were together. It wasn't like it was a weird thing. But I kind of get the parasocial relationship where sometimes I think I'm a little bit closer with people than I actually am.
Yeah, definitely. But I think, thankfully, we've all got the majority of our marbles. So
yes.
There's that. Yeah. You can feel it, see it, and understand it rather than just totally misinterpret it like these two have, where it's like, this person can't be so important to me without me being important to them.
Yeah. And I think we kind of, like, one of my favorite podcasts is Help I Sexted My Boss. And I just love those two people. And like, I would think, oh my God, I know so much about them, to the point where I would go the opposite way and I go, I never want to meet them just because I I think that I know too much about their lives, like just from listening to them and enjoying their stuff.
When you start asking after like their pets. Oh, yeah. How's Mitzi doing? Yeah. How was the vets last week?
How are the rats doing, Helena?
I know that's the question on everybody's lips as soon as they see me.
How are the rats? I just find it really interesting that you could go that far. I think in my mind I go, oh, yeah, so if you push it to the next level, to the next level, to the next level, that's kind of what this film is.
Yeah.
It's just escalation. And I always feel with films like this, it's really hard to end them because they're so extreme anyway that I think you can often be disappointed by an ending, and they kind of just go, well, the gloves are off. Let's just do whatever we want to do, because you can't go anywhere. You can't just go, oh, and then they learned their lesson and they were just completely sane and they lived a great life. Like, you can't do that with a film like this.
Yeah, there's no coming back from what they do. Like, and I think it's good that so they hold up Jerry. The sort of loose outline of the end is that they hold up Jerry, kidnap him, use him as hostage to get Pupkin on the show, and for Masha to essentially sexually assault him. It's really, really bleak. And it is awkward. Like, obviously it's horrible, but it is like, it's one of those ones where I'm sat there thinking, like, if this was like gender reversed as well, how like horrifying this would be. And I think the only thing that the saving grace is that these two absolutely love to talk. So it's so long before anything actually happens that he's able to, essentially, I mean, one, lamp her properly and then escape.
Yes.
Which is like fair play.
Absolutely. I get it. We all get it at that point when he's running away.
It's not like glorifying violence against women. It's like glorifying it's not even glorifying it. It's like self-defense is okay at that point. Yeah. Like, if someone's held you up by gunpoint for hours, hit him and run away. Pretty
just
good.
Get out. Yeah, it's fair enough. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Once you realize the gun is fake, at least.
Well, yeah, that's and he.
Yes.
Oh, but he's so stone-faced through that entire scene. He doesn't look... I guess one of the reasons it's less chilling is that... And it's more just awkward, at least in my experience of the film, was, like, he doesn't really seem scared. Like, he's really, like, pissed off. And he's being really cautious, but he's, like, very much in, like, how do I manipulate this? How do I get out of this situation? What do I have to do?
Yeah.
How do I keep them calm? Like, he's very calculated, and it's almost like this isn't his first rodeo with being held up by stalkers. And it's probably, I mean, hopefully it is, but it's like, maybe because he's been through this isn't the first time he's had a stalker. This isn't the first time people have like molested him or, you know, gone after him. Like, it's very clear that he has, like, this has been going on for a while with various different people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he can kind of use his knowledge of that to be like, what can I say to this woman to help me get out of here?
Yeah.
Like, you know, she'll believe pretty much anything he says. So how can he manipulate that and use that for his own sake and use it for to get out? Like,
what the gen?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
It's lighthearted, as light as this film ever really gets, which is dim, very dim.
Yeah, but,
like what it did make me laugh. I think because you're just so desperate for some comic relief as well at this point. Was when so he's taped up to the nines, like he is more taped than man. And she taped to this chair so he can't escape. And then she's like, basically, we're gonna have sex on the table. I can't believe this is actually happening. And he's just sat there like, fuck's sake. And she's like,
not again.
He uses like his weird sexy talk show voice and is like, remove the tape. And she's like, okay. And it just takes her so long. And it's just didn't think that one through, did you?
Well, it's obviously her fantasy as well. Like, it's everything that she's dreamed of, and she's planned out every little detail of this. I kind of think, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I feel like there is a reference in all TV shows. There was a TV show called Entourage back in the day, which I remember when I was like a teenager, it was really big. And I feel like Vinny Chase, the main character, I feel like his fake name is Rupert Pupkin in Entourage, which I don't know if that, I can probably look it up right now. But I feel like it's kind of been a hit with like the industry, but not with with lots of people. Oh, yeah, Rupert Pupkin Entourage. Here we go. Wondering, this is on Reddit, wondering if anyone else in this sub noticed. I noticed. I'm probably the only one.
There's two of you.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just find it really interesting that this kind of became big in the film and TV world, and everyone kind of knows about the film, but it didn't. It wasn't like this huge smash hit. Like
It was a flop. All things.
It was a real flop. But even if I say King of Comedy to people, no one really knows what it is,
I hadn't heard of it.
Yeah.
No.
I'd heard of it before, but I'd never actually, never seen it before. I knew was like, this is the, I guess, open brackets, inspiration for Joker.
Can you imagine, though, taking a girl out on a date and being like, let's go and see this fun new thing, King of Comedy, and you just both sat there in silence, and then you're at the diner later eating ice cream in silence, and then you're like... So
next thing you know, you
take
to the chair.
Is that what you think a good film is? Is that what you think? Do you relate to this character?
I had a friend that was telling me that that she went on a date once with a guy, and he was like talking, like, they're having a really nice night, and then he was like, there's a film I want to watch, and he kept talking about it for ages and everything, and it was a Human Centipede, and like they watched the Human Centipede, and I was like, what a downer. Like, what a weird way to like to go, let's watch a movie together. I feel like, you know, that's probably worse than the King of Comedy, but you know, King of Comedy is just something that you walk away from it kind of feeling uneasy. Like, it's not a film that I would watch at the end of a night before I go to bed, or it's not a film that, like...
I wanted a chaser. I wanted to watch something else afterwards. It was a little bit more upbeat.
It's not like you're not going away from it going, it was a comedy film, it was something easy, it was fun. You kind of walk away from it asking a lot of questions, and I don't really think that it doesn't answer any questions, which is, you know, the hard thing about the film is that you don't walk away from it going, everything was solved and I kind of understand it now.
Yeah,
and I understand
it's not a Marvel Avengers movie, is it?
No, it's not. It's not.
But I, it's one of those ones where I don't think I enjoyed it in the moment, but I've enjoyed thinking about it since.
It's
offensive. Yeah, it's
it's a thinker.
I think, it's one of those ones where it's like, I'm glad I've watched it. It's like certain classic books where you're like, I'm glad I've read it, but I am not touching it again. I'm quite happy for that to be a one and done.
Yeah, had the experience. When was the last time that you'd have watched this then, do you reckon? And when did you first discover it, actually, as well?
I think I discovered it like maybe 10 years ago or something. I think a friend... I think it was like looking at films about comedy. Like, I think it was like... Yeah, I think a friend recommended it as a great film about comedy and madness. And I was like, oh, great. And I watched it. And I was so, I remember I didn't really like it when I first watched it. But I would watch it at least, but I would watch it at least once a year. Like I watch it once a year. And I show it to people if I know that they'll like it. Now I don't. But also, I'm very easy to go, we can turn it off any point if you don't like it. But it is one of those films that I think I've probably watched about 10 times, maybe more. Mm-hmm. And I always get something else out of it. Like it's a film that really makes me think, and I just think about it. I don't know, there's always something. And I think maybe being in the, you know, the comedy world for like, you know, a long, you know, 12 years now, it's a long time to kind of have seen different elements of that comedy world. Like not that it's exactly the same, but it's certainly seen bits and pieces of, you know, different parts of that comedy world and people who really love it and people that, you know, kind of, I guess the parasocial relationship and also the, you know, how mad it is and how no one in it really has a story of redemption. There's no arc in there where you're like, oh, they all come out on top, or, you know, you don't even know what happens to Sandra Bernhardt. You know, you don't really, like, it's not really explained at the, like, you know, what happened to her? Like, we kind of have Rupert.
In my mind, intense psychiatric support.
Yeah, I think so too.
Even Jerry, it's just like, as soon as Rupert has hit the big time, it's just all him. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing else. There's no, oh, Jerry kind of continues his show and gets stalked 4 times a week and all that kind of thing. You know, he's just business as usual. just focusing on Rupert and all of the, like you say, it presents it as, oh, he's gone to prison, but then, like, you know, this was a televised event. He writes a book about it. He becomes this big famous guy.
Mm. Yeah.
Or does he?
Does he? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the two types of fans, I guess, super fans that are in this film. There is the one that's in love with Jerry and the one that sees Jerry as a tool to get what he wants. Like, he's in this aspiration. Yeah. He's a goal. He wants to be as big as Jerry. Or essentially, he wants to be Jerry, but he doesn't actually, like, value Jerry as a person, or as a, like, he doesn't want to be his best mate to, because he's, like, so obsessed with him as a person. It's about his success and his fame, and that's what this guy's after. So, of course, as soon as he's got that, he's got no use for Jerry anymore. And
no,
that one of the early fantasies is of them eating lunch together. And is it one of the first ones where it's like, that's the first time we see something that we realize is definitely not true? And they're having lunch. It's just after he's, it's one of the first scenes.
It's after he's said, like, you know, oh, call my office once he's, like, been kicked out of the limo. Yeah.
And they have lunch and it's Jerry begging him to come and host the show for 6 weeks so that Jerry can have a holiday. And then, which is obviously, you know, a privilege, it'd be great, but it's like he's having to beg, and it's like, got to, like, Jerry's on basically on his knees, like, asking, like, please do this for me. And then someone comes up and asks Pupkin for an autograph, and, like, doesn't even acknowledge.
And
Jerry. Even in that scene, like, that's when it starts kind of flicking back and forth to him actually just sitting in the basement talking to himself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like it's just all in his head. And then even the next sort of fantasy scene when like he's like at Jerry's office, or the one thing I noticed that the way it's shot and the way that Rupert is sitting is he's so low down compared to Jerry. Like he's almost lying down, like, rather than, you know, sitting in a normal chair.
Yes,
but I was like, is that kind of showing how he feels he is compared to Jerry and all that kind of thing.
I thought it was like he's over wanky movie nonsense. He's overacting in a way. I'd say that he's got this bravado about him, this like he's like in talk show host mode because he's desperate to prove that that's what he can do to Jerry. So that's why he's like super relaxed, super chill, when we know, in fact, his brain is probably going about 8 million miles an hour, desperately analysing how he can manipulate the situation. Or maybe that's giving him too much sort of intellectual credit. I don't know. It's like, you can't trust the narrator of this film at all. And no. Just because we see him sitting there like that doesn't mean that's how he actually was.
Oh no, that whole scene doesn't happen. Mm. It's just in his head when he's, you know, that whole segment of him where he's like taking the tape into and like he's just waiting for Jerry constantly. He's like, no, I've spoken to Jerry. He knows I'm here, and he doesn't realize he has to go through these producers and yeah. all sorts.
Which is sad because
actually, yeah,
what he forgets is that I know we find out that Jerry just said it to get rid of him. But he does say, like, send in a tape and ask yeah. for, is it Claire or something, like his
the director person at the front or something desk.
And like
yeah
and he's but he just doesn't want to do that. He's like, no, I don't want to speak to him, I want to speak to Jerry.
Yeah, it's like
they do give him a good chance being,
yeah mm.
And he totally obviously he squanders it because he's, you know, going down a very dangerous psychiatric path. But it's the same. It's like, oh, if he'd done what they said, if he'd taken any yeah. of that advice that they get, it was like, look, you're not ready. You could be. Like, give yourself a yeah. shot. Like, go and do some actual... Go and work. Go and be a comic for a bit. And then we'll listen to you again once you've sort of refined your material.
Yeah, because yeah, like, I was taking it as they hadn't actually listened to his tape in the first place. It was just, you know, saying the generic few things that you would say to get rid of someone like that, because at that point he has yeah. become obsessive and just constantly like, no, it's okay, like, oh, I'll bring it back to you tomorrow. It's like, yeah, that's okay, I'll wait here then. Like,
yeah.
No sane
yeah.
person would do that.
No, he never gives off good vibes. He's never, you know, and he just doesn't want to work for what he has to do. He just, you know, even in the flashbacks, he thinks that he's like Jerry's most popular guest and everyone just loves him and he's the guy, which is yeah. so bizarre. Like, he doesn't want to put any of the work in. He just kind yeah, of wants to have everything.
He's obsessed with having the big break, but is yeah. totally ignorant to the fact that most people's big breaks comes after, like, you know, 5 to 10 years of pretty hard work and grafting yeah, and yeah. Like getting to know people, networking.
He's not into it. He's yeah. not into it.
Why
it's
do
so,
that
so
when you can skip the queue?
Yeah, yeah. yeah. yeah.
And that, yeah, just, I think for someone who's quite, oh, this sounds awful, that was just the most awful sentence I was about to say, quite humble, calling yourself humble just doesn't really work, but I really struggle. I mean, that's what podcasts have been good for, my self-esteem, to be fair, is like actually people in saying that they enjoy it and stuff like that's been like, oh, that's nice, because
yeah,
I don't
yeah,
know
yeah.
if it's just a British thing as well, where I'm like, you can't say you're good at anything or like, have a high opinion
of yourself.
No, it's
an Australian thing as well. Yeah, yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
Otherwise, you are a bit of an arsehole.
Yeah.
So just watching this guy with this unbelievable amount of totally unfounded confidence, it's mortifying.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I couldn't. It is. Oh my goodness. The confidence is, I mean, it's insane. It's literally insane. But it's, oh God, I would love to have a taste of it for like a day.
yeah.
Just feel like a million bucks and know deep in my heart, know that I can make it as like this, you know, huge TV and film star.
Yeah. If you wait in an office for long enough and refuse to leave, you too could do that.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. I'll, yeah.
It's a great how-to guide.
Don't check in your hallway.
It's the same with like, yeah, when we've sort of approached people to be on the show, and sometimes, you know, maybe we've overestimated ourselves, but it's like, you know, it's worth a shot.
Yeah, and, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes you just don't hear anything. You just get completely, or you get a yes, but then just nothing past that. And it's yep. like, that's always yeah, a little yeah. bit more like, it just brings, you know, brings you back down to reality.
Yeah.
But this guy, he doesn't perceive any of these rejections.
No. No,
like
there's no learning curve at all. No. Yeah, I like it that there's no learning curve. Like, it's like, he doesn't get better. There, you know, there's nothing, there's no redemption in there that he's going to be a different person either, which a lot of stories have that arc where you go, oh, yeah, right. Like, you know, in a regular film, if there's two characters, they'll have a fight halfway through and then they're going to get back together. And, you know, there's none of that. There's no arc in this where you go, oh, yeah, right, he worked it out and he's a better person now.
Yeah, like a lesser version of the film would have kind of, I feel like it could have been like they'd pair off the two like the Masher and Pupkin together and they like learn from each other. And, you know, it all works out in the end where they bring each other back down to reality and actually they're enough for each other and it's all good feelings. And no, instead it's like they ramp each other up and they both go, like, I mean, like the last scene we see with Masha is her running down the street screaming in her underwear.
Yeah. And that's yeah, it. No, it's yeah. never, she'd never come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, because ultimately it's about Pupkin. She's another tool for him. And she treats him the same way. She is absolutely, she doesn't even like him. It's very apparent that neither of them like each other. But they'll use each other to get what they want.
And she's got money, exactly. I think. Like she's she's quite wealthy in it. And I don't really understand where the money, like I want to know her story as well, which you don't actually get to know anything about her.
I just assumed rich heiress kind of vibe. Rich distant parents, which is like, my parents never told me I love them and I'm fine with that. And it's like, are you, babe? Are you? You sure?
You don't think
there's anything there? but we get so little of her. Like, I think we know, she had cold parents and likes knitting.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's it. That's all you get. It's more than enough.
Mm. Yeah. Even another version of this where, you know, they give him his tape back and he goes, okay, I'll go and do the local comedy scene and build. There was never a point in this movie where I was like, he's going to do that. Mm. No, instead he'll fucking kidnap Jerry and use that to get what he wants.
The only
he doesn't even
it's
want to be
way.
A comedian. He just wants fame.
No.
Because we don't see any of his jokes until the last the sketch at the end, well, the last bit, the talk show thing where he's managed to, you know, literally blackmail and hostage hold his way onto TV.
Yep.
That's the first time we actually see him do any comedy, because other than that, it's either it's cut or it goes to like he's just laughing in his head about what something funny that Jerry has said. There's not any of his own jokes.
No.
And, so it really doesn't show you if he's any good or not. Which I think was
no, which you don't even realize. Good. Even at the end, you're kind of like, is he good? Like it's hard to know. Like,
as well as if he had a modicum really of like sense, maybe he could have been.
Yeah,
But it's also so hard to tell because those jokes, the jokes at the end, I really like the sketch because it's such geographical humor.
Yeah,
from a place I'm not from.
And like then the kind of
suburbs,
you know,
of suburbs of suburbs kind of thing. Is that funny? I don't know.
Yeah.
Like that could actually be really on point and like everyone agrees, but we're not going to know. The vast audience isn't going to know. It's got a laugh track, but then it's like, if you know anything about live performances, they just tell you, just laugh. Even if you don't get the joke, laugh, because you might get it later. Like, we just need you to support
them. It's for the show. Just laugh at it. Because even then when he goes from that into talking about how, you know, he had alcoholic parents who were never there and all that kind of thing. And yeah, I suppose that's, I was going to say a bit more relatable, not personally, but more relatable than this suburb in New York.
That's the thing though, is it even true? Like, I don't think his parents are abusive or alcoholic. I think his parents are probably really fucking fed up with him.
Yeah, that's why he's living in the basement.
That, like, you know, loving, she's not kicked him out.
Yeah,
that says something. And it's probably not his income that's supporting them both.
I mean, is she even real, though, either?
God, are you sort of seeing some kind of Norman Bates thing going on?
I don't know, maybe in his head. I guess she is always just interrupting him and telling him to stop, maybe she is the real
scene,
character.
But his mum is actually just another film star cut out that is sat at the breakfast table.
Making dinner.
But it's a curious one because I so uncomfortable to watch. And I wasn't cross that you made us watch it, but it was just like, oh, this is pretty heavy. Considering I'm not sure what order these come out in, but our previous was it The Devil Wears Prada?
Interesting
film, but it was like, you know, ultimately is pretty feel good and comparatively light.
Yeah. Comparatively, to anything I think is light to this film.
Well, I remember I made us watch The Hills Have Eyes because I liked the cover art.
Right.
Yeah, that was for our, was like, this was too scary, so I didn't watch it.
Yeah, that one was a lot, but this one's, this is a close second for like how
I think the closest intense. One I can think of for this is we had a guest on recently who, we did the movie Jack, which is that Robin Williams one.
I flaked for this one.
Yeah, you were ill during that one, but it's like, oh, Robin Williams, and he's got the mind of a child, but in a man's body. That's going to be really funny.
Mm.
Yeah. And it was dark and depressing and weird as, and just really fucking weird. And that was the same sort of vibe from this. Where, I mean, I kind of knew going in that it was going to be a little bit more kind of, I guess, psychological and a bit weirder. But with Jack, from the get-go, I was like, oh, this will be really funny. It's Robin Williams. I'm going to have a great time. And then I'm just sitting there like...
Yeah.
But it is essentially a psychological horror, this film. And I don't know if I'm just projecting, because I work, because I mean, obviously we're grateful for all our Patreons, not working yet. And I work at a psychiatric hospital.
Right.
So
okay,
I
sure,
see
sure.
everything through like this lens of like being hyper aware of a lot of mental illnesses, and I'm sitting there and, like proper backseat diagnosing these people the whole time, and I'm like, that can't be a unique thing to me. Like, surely it's very apparent, but I'm just there like, okay, nice narcissistic personality, antisocial, like, okay, there's quite a lot going on there. Maybe emotionally unstable disorder. Okay,
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah. It's funny because you have that, and I'm watching a film, and I'm like, "Oh, that's a cool fish," because my job is a bit less impressive. But yeah,
I wouldn't call my job at the moment is Excel for days. So
very cool.
Oh yeah, super cool. When I was a teenager, I always aspired to be like level 3 qualified in Excel.
Yeah.
My goal.
One day I'll get there. Keep dreaming, kid.
You keep trying.
You got this.
You keep trying. Yeah. It's not all auto summon tables, I promise. It gets really good. It's a slow burn, Excel, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that aside, yeah, like, I don't know how much of that I was projecting, because I've worked with a lot of, as you'd expect, very ill people, and people that are very unwell and really struggling with very complicated things. But yeah, normally you get a bit of insight, a little bit of background, like, you know, kind
of
why.
Yeah, of course.
Or what's happened.
Yeah.
Because there's, you know, there doesn't have to be environmental factors, but there often are. But for this one, we just get nothing. And it's just...
We're in the deep end like a swimming pool, and we're just flapping about. We don't know what's going on. And I think that's the best way to watch a film.
Mm.
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
it is nice when films just throw you in like that, like most of the time. Like, you know, just this is where we are. This is, you know, the story is starting at this point. Everything that's happened before doesn't matter. You'll get it. Here we go.
You'll get it. Don't worry. Yeah. You'll get
it. Who needs context? You've heard of talk show hosts and New York. That's
all
you need.
Wild people.
Yeah.
I feel like another thing I found with this film was that, like, a lot of the time when you're watching movies like this and you're like, it's that actor. I really lost Robert De Niro in this role. Mm. Like, I'm watching it and I'm like, this is the character of Pupkin. There was I mean, most films I've seen with Robert De Niro, and, you know, he's a bit older, like, you know, fucking Meet the Parents and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm watching this and it's just, it's the character, not, oh, I'm watching Tom Cruise run around for 2 hours, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, 100%. Yeah, it's not the guy you recognise. So it's like, he does a really good job in it. Like, he's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
And his shitty moustache as well, I think, does some of that heavy lifting because it's terrible.
That was the other character in the film.
Yeah. His moustache. And also, I found a lot of the time, like, the suits he was wearing, it was like he was trying to mirror what Jerry was wearing a lot as well.
Yeah, well, they're wearing, like, identical suits in that first scene, that first fantasy.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, it's all coming back to me. I won't have to watch it again this year. I'll have 1 year off.
But it's, it was a real, it's a pretty wild ride. It's one of those ones where it's like, yeah, this isn't one that you bring people around for a popcorn party. Like, watch this by yourself or with someone you trust and is tolerant.
Yeah.
Yes. Or a real movie buff who's going to be like, let's deep dive into this.
I'll just pop on... Meet the Parents. Just pop that on. That's another one.
Yeah.
Just
pop that on. It's a good double bill, really.
It is. That's the one to get you to sleep.
The DVD you can buy that's
Yeah. The King Double of Comedy feature. And Meet the Parents.
Yeah. But yeah, it's super intense. I'm still like thinking, I watched it last night.
Yeah, right. It's
and
fresh.
It's very fresh. But I also, yeah, part of me doesn't ever want to watch it again. And then part of me is like, well, you know, it's interesting. It's not a good time, but yeah. It's an interesting time.
Yeah.
That's how I feel with Midsommar. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I've seen it. I'm fine with that. But part of me is like, I kind of want to watch it again just to see what I missed. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I just watched like the 10 minute, like things you missed when you first watched Midsommar thing on YouTube.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Screen rant. Yeah. There's scratch a face that in itch. The flowers in the background. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
There's pubes in the soup. I don't know. Like that.
Oh yeah,
that was
yeah.
One where I was like, well, maybe I'll watch it again, and then realise I'm good, I'm fine.
Yeah, half of the things on those articles are here's things you missed. Number one, the main point of the movie.
They
number
all
two, the plot. Number three, this actor. Like,
But it's yeah. I'm really glad we got to watch this because it's I don't know. Yeah, yeah
it's just.
Interesting.
It's
interesting.
One that I'm glad that we watched and then had the opportunity to talk about and not just, like, you know, every so often I'm going through films that I've missed in terms of, like, you know, oh, this is supposed to be really good. Like, I feel like if I watched this, I couldn't then just sit there on it and be like, well, now I have to just not tell anyone about this.
Yeah, yeah. I can never talk about it again or never sleep again.
Discuss/slash commiserate kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice, and it's nice to get everyone else's views on it as well. Like, yeah. I guess if you had to give this a meaningless score out of 10, then what do you reckon you'd give this? I think because personally, I was going to go for 9 reels of tape they used to tie up Jerry. that would be my score for this movie. It was I really liked it as a film, but yeah, it's one that I'll probably not watch again, at least for quite a while.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair.
I can't imagine Scorsese just being like, nope, cut, more tape. Yeah. He doesn't look secure enough. Do another roll. And they're like, really? It looks more like a mummy than a talk show host. Yeah, it's hard. Because it's like, I think it's a good movie, but it's not a good time. So yeah, I never know, like, comfortable. Like, yeah, as far as, like, comfortability and, like, comfort in this film, like, it's a solid, like, 5.
Five? Oh, my God.
But I actually really enjoyed talking about it, so then it's like, okay. So, like, I think it's
5.5.
It's, I'm stalling while I try and think of something. Yeah, it's 8 cardboard cutouts of out of his mum out of 10. It's a really interesting film. Like, yeah, I hate the term challenging film, but it is a bit of work, and that could be refreshing actually after having a lot of films that have just been like, here, enjoy this cuddle, and those are nice as well, but it just have a different purpose, I guess. This felt a little bit more arty and
yeah,
not sure what it's trying to say, but it says it really uncomfortably. Yeah,
look, we've recently done Blade and X-Men. Yeah, I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, I feel like there was. Yeah, we had a good time talking about Blade, but you know, none of us was out here thinking like, "Oh God, don't trust the."
Well,
narrator.
I'm gonna give it 9. Robert De Niro's mustaches. I think that's my fair rating because I do watch it all the time.
I can see why. Like, it's especially someone who's in the comedy scene and. Like, I mean, obviously you're not from New York, but you've grown up. We've all grown up with, like, that as a fundamental part of our culture.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to be American to have watched a lot of American talk show host stuff.
That's right, yeah.
But it's so intense. But I would recommend it to other people. I just wouldn't want to go and watch it with them.
Yeah. Ever again. Yeah.
Watch it, and then don't tell me straight. Don't message me while you're watching it. Give it 24 hours, and then we'll have a chat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely want to sit on for a bit. Well, I guess with that, I've been Dan.
And I've been Helena.
I've been Sammy.
Thank you so much for being on the
show, Sally.
Where can people find you if they don't know where you are already? And I mean, like, online, not your house.
Yeah, just your home phone, where's your guest house?
Where you go to play golf? Myself, yeah.
Where do you keep your tape?
Yeah, you won't bring your own. You want to time me up, but you won't bring your own. You can find me. I have a podcast called Confessions. You can follow me. I'm on Confessions, the podcast on everything. So you can find me. It's where I read online confessions on reddit.com every single week, or Am I the Asshole Threads. And just people just look horrified while I read that to them every week. It's a wonderful, wonderful part of my week.
Yeah, I have listened to quite a few episodes of that. It's a really good time. Also, like you recently did an episode of Do Go On, which is really good.
I did. I think I did two episodes recently. I did a report, and then they read me a report recently as well. And yeah, so that was a lot of fun. I love Do Go On. So it's always fun to kind of go on there and read a report. And I actually wrote one this time. I actually did some work, so that felt good. Felt powerful.
Yeah, as long as your next confessions, I'm worried, is going to be, am I the arsehole? I held up a comic to get my friend.
Yeah, that's right.
But then he ran away and I'm really confused.
That's all I'll do from now on.
Well, you can find this podcast on social media at Hilton Pod. That's at HILTM Pod. We're on Discord if you want to come and chat to us there. Let us know what you think about this film, I guess. Yeah, give it a day or so after watching it, though. We also have a Patreon if anyone wants to support the show. Normally, Mikey comes up with a fun thing that we're doing for the Patreon based off of the movie, but he's not here and I don't know what we would do.
I reckon either Prince of Comedy or Therapy for Masha. Two good causes.
I think we invest in tape and hope for the best.
Because we've done quite a few Australian comics, and yeah, it's no offense, but your internet kind of sucks.
It really does. It's really terrible.
If you cut out when you're recording your end, at least we've kept your audio. Whereas if we try and record it, then we have to ask you to repeat yourself, which is just the worst thing to try and put someone on the spot. Like, so you think that thing you just said. Say it again exactly the same, please.
But funnier.